Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, David Von Strong. And now, here's David.
Hello! Charlottesville! It is Sunday! It is 10 o'clock! It is a lovely, lovely, lovely weather outside. A lovely weather.
So lovely.
So lovely. And this is Homegrown, your show about local art here in the new and burgeoning Charlottesville. I am David Von Strong, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo. Little guy, hairy feet, trying to get through the darkness.
Trying to get through the darkness!
Hashtag Trump's America. The whitening of America. And we always give it to you on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We give you the hotness all of the time. Stay tuned for the great programming of 94.7. So, we gonna keep it going. Banter, I don't have much to talk about. Who's this guy saying I look like a sleepy Russell Wilson? That's true, though. Yeah, but I'm not getting that Russell Wilson paycheck, though, so that's a problem. That's a problem. Shout out to Aaron David Gilley for the morning laughs. I see you. No, I don't have much to talk about. All I have to, yeah, go ahead.
You don't have the burgeoning war with Iran to talk about? What?
Oh, the war that we just made up and just like started to just fabricate on our own.
Every war is made up in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. I mean.
Wagging the dog, baby. Wagging the dog. I mean, we all knew that this would be some type of huge stunt going on before the 2020 campaign. Trump has already rolled out his 2020 campaign. Here we go. Here we go. As if we weren't in the thick of it already. It's like, so we just have to figure out as a country, where do we want to go? And we've already seen where we've been going for the past so many years.
You mean whom we want to invade next?
Clinton Johnson, executive producer of Homegrown. Always bringing a happy. Always bringing a light into a situation. Yeah, I know World War III is like, you know, inevitable, like at this point right now. Like, I get it. We've already aligned ourselves with every axis of evil in the world. North Korea, Saudi Arabia. Oh, yeah, Trump's good with all of them. Good links. Good people. Love letters. So we just have to figure out what side of the fray we want to be on in World War III. Because it sounds like we're those guys wearing patches right now. We're not the happy people. We're not the good people that they play in the video games. We're the ones that they shoot. Yeah, it's gonna be a problem. But let's go on to more poignant matters. I just wanna flip the script, change the subject. These are one of those special shows where we have just one guest, just one person in the house that we can feature because their work is so vast. And they have done. why are you laughing? But this person,
the other guest didn't show.
You're not supposed to say that, Greg.
Oh, sorry.
You're supposed to keep up the illusion.
Poetry is about truth, baby. Poetry is about truth.
It's a good thing this mic is.
Poetry is so about truth. I didn't want it to be a lie. I just wanted to omit the fact that our second guest didn't show up. But I love these shows because, again, we can focus on one guest, and this one guest has so much incredible work in their whole, like, I want to say discography, but they're not a musician. But they've just been done. They've done so much.
You could also say I'm so damn old. Of course, I've done a lot.
You are experienced, sir.
Experienced.
You are wise beyond your years.
72.
And I refuse
no beyond
and
72.
Take umbrage
72 is all you get. That's why I'm here. This is my last radio show.
Gregory Orr is in the house. He is going to be at the release event of his new book, The Last Love Poem I Will Ever Write, going down at New Dominion Bookshop on June 18th. Mr. Orr, it is an honor and a pleasure to have you in a homegrown studio.
Thank you. It's fun already.
Yes, sir. You're having more fun than I am. So let's talk about it. How many books? This is which book?
I think it's about 12 books of poems. Yeah, 12 books of poems, let's say. And then a memoir, my childhood, and then two or three books about poetry.
Mm-hmm. About the techniques of poetry or how?
The first book about poetry I wrote is called Poetry is Survival. Mm. And it's really about this, my experience of poetry, how I came to poetry, which is to say lyric poetry. Mm-hmm. I came to it as something that saved my life, that I would not have been in this world very long without having had this high school teacher who introduced me to the possibility of writing poetry, of expressing myself. I mean, she showed us other kinds of ways of expressing yourself too, you know, like writing short stories and stuff. Every time I wrote a short story, the guy, the hero at the end, commits suicide. So you begin to get the idea that I was not a happy camper. Where did that happy, where did that unhappy come from? I mean, you know, I grew up in the country, upstate New York.
Yeah.
And when I was 12, in a hunting accident, I killed my younger brother.
Oh my God.
So I'm 12, he was 8. I'm 14, my mom dies overnight. And I kept thinking, wait a minute, she was the one person I hoped I could talk to about how horrible I feel about what I happened, what I did. And then she's gone. And I'm thinking, I am. And then I can't say that word because we're on the air.
FCC.
But I'm in real trouble. I'm isolated. I don't know. I can't talk to anybody. Everybody in my small town knows what I did. How am I going to live? There's no meaning in the world. Because, I mean, you know, would God do this? Or am I evil? Or what's going down? So I just sort of survived for about 3 or 4 years. And then this high school teacher said, well, how about we write a story? How about we write a poem? How about we do this? And I suddenly discovered what poetry means for me, which is you take what's inside you and you turn it into words. And by just turning into words and putting them on the page, then it's outside you. It's not inside you, eating your heart and your whole life up. You know, it's out there. And then you can mess around with it and try to make it into something that's coherent or, hey, let's maybe beautiful. Nah, well, whatever, you know, something. Or intense. But it's like there as a, it's not even a safety valve. Because safety valve would be like, you know, going running or sports or screaming in a closet.
Right.
But it's you're taking an active part and shaping it.
Yeah,
you're creating meaning.
Yeah, it's intentional. You're not just using something physical to get out an emotion or a motivation. You're doing something with a thoughtful, methodical intention to repair or just to release or whatever you choose to do with those words.
Exactly.
This is too early in the interview for me to start crying. I just want to let that be known.
Let's laugh instead.
Yeah, let's laugh instead.
So do you think of art as being a tool for exorcism?
Well, that means there's demons in you. And, of course, there are. There's a hell of a lot of demons in you. I like to go with expressive, you know, like it's all in you. And especially if you're a guy in our country, it's in you and you don't usually think you have access to words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you get this, what's in you, and turn it into words. Okay, but that's expressive, and that's totally cool. And so you're doing expressive. Then you're shaping it, what you're calling intentional, which is, again, suddenly you're, instead of a passive victim of trauma, let's use the shorthand for that, my story or most people's stories, instead of a passive victim of being trauma, you become an active agent. First you turned it into words, then you shape the words into some coherence. Down the line, there's the distant, desperate possibility that you might actually communicate with somebody. Even though you can't talk directly to people, which I couldn't. I mean, I couldn't even speak for years, you know. I just didn't dare. But you can communicate with people indirectly through this art that you make, through the song or the poem or, you know, the book. And that means you're not alone. You're not alone in the same kind of way. I mean, I guess we're all alone. But I could not reconnect with my community or my family after my early experiences. Like most people, when something awful happens, they retreat into either silence or platitudes. Like a friend of my father spoke to me the first day of my brother's death and said, Peter, my brother, Peter's already in heaven. He's sitting down to feast with Jesus. And I thought, oh my God, that's crazy. You know? Are you kidding me? Uh-huh. I close my eyes and he's lying dead at my feet. And you're telling me he's in heaven having a snack? It's like, whoa, you know. So religion tries to explain and tries to say, well, there's this big plan or God has some purpose here. But that I lost that, right? Just like that, you know. So I was real deep.
When did you first find yourself comfortable to actually talk about the subject?
And oh, good question.
Actually speak about what had happened in a non-poetic way to people like this.
Yeah, yeah, really. Oh, long time. I could not even write about it in poems for maybe 10 years. I mean, I knew I had to write about it. I knew once I started writing, oh, well, this is fun. This is exciting. I'm making up worlds and stuff like this. But back in my mind, I know, yeah, but you really have to talk about that. And I said, I can't talk about that. Well, you've got to sometime. Or it's just we're just going to eat you up from inside. You're going to end up killing yourself, which is like, what's really pretty probable. What I was doing is I was looking for meaning. Got to say, okay. So two paths opened to me. One was writing. The other was social activism. So like when I'm 18, I go to Mississippi to work with the civil rights movement.
Yeah, you remember SNCC.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Holy smokes.
Back in 65.
Holy smokes, you were a member of SNCC.
Yeah, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, yes.
Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, formulated the bus boycott in Montgomery, no big deal.
It was... Yeah, but I got to tell you a secret, though.
Been a member of SNCC.
Yeah. Well, it didn't work out. I mean, it did. I did work in Mississippi and stuff, but it all was pretty violent. And so most of the time I was there, I was in jail or being beaten. Mm. We were finally kidnapped by by vigilantes in Alabama. I'm put in solitary confinement for 8 days. And these were people who, the guy who arrested me like a month after I was there, he killed another civil rights worker in broad daylight, like with a shotgun. You know, I mean, just it was Hainesville, Alabama. Not a nice town. And they'd killed the Selma Montgomery March had been right near Hainesville 2 months before I was kidnapped. So they were kind of planning to kill me, but they didn't. I got out. But it was crazy. So I thought, you know what? Two roads to meaning, social activism, poetry. I think poetry's safer. I think, you know, to go from private trauma of violence in my family to social violence of racism in America, it's too much.
And it's almost too parallel
yes.
to the moments of today and right now. So we're just going to take a little break. I'm going to get a tissue. and we will be right back with the remarkable Gregory Orr here on Homegrown. This is Homegrown. Drop.
Charlottesville. I'm Flora Lark.
And I'm Jonah Noel.
And we are the Fire Tigers.
This is Homegrown,
your show about local art
on 94.7 WPVC,
the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Awesome.
Okay, how did that sound?
Should we try it again?
I was a little hesitant.
Yeah.
So say it a few times.
Yeah, yeah.
94.7 WPVC.
Okay.
WPVC. WPVC.
Okay. Third time's charm. We're ready.
Good. Hey, Charlottesville.
17 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Clinton. What? Gregory Orr is in the house. He is a poet. Not just some poet on the street, a nationally, globally recognized poet. I believe translated in 18 languages. Your books have been publicly recognized by the National Endowment for the Arts. You're pretty much all of your works are featured in poetry in the Poetry Foundation. I mean, and you founded the MFA at UVA. You have transformed your trauma into an incredible work of the craft that you chose to undertake. Talk about that, like stepping, because I mean,
can I jump in? So, can we talk about you finding your voice? And specifically what is for our audience who doesn't know, what is lyric poetry and when did you say, could you talk about your journey defining, okay,
sure.
This is the type of poetry that
sure.
I want to do. This is the poetry that speaks to me.
Sure. Okay. First thing is that we're not going to have a journey because it just like happens like that, but here we go. Remember I said, like, I wrote these short stories, and the main character at the end of each one, you know, when I'm a kid, like in high school, at the end of each one, the main character commits suicide?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To me, that says something about prose, which is that language in prose is about, like, the world as it is, pretty much,
yeah.
You know? And you're a good prose writer if you can make this seem like you could describe the radio station here and make it seem like we were there. I mean, that may be a naive idea of prose, but that was my experience of it. And like, for me to describe where I was and what the world was like as a kid, you know, the only way out, the only answer was suicide, right? So that wasn't happy. Poetry, the use of language in poetry is totally different. Lyric poetry and song, they're the same animal, you know. They're just part of a spectrum. Some of it gets stuck on a page, and you know, some people are lucky enough to be able to sing, which I can't, and you know, it becomes song. But what you're looking at is the expression of an individual voice talking about his or her experience and emotions. And you're also doing something else that's different than prose. The language is magical. You're creating a world in a poem out of language. You're not describing the world that's here. All I can say is that's the way I see it. That's the way I experienced it. When I wrote the first poem in that high school class, I just made up some world of somebody standing on a rock by the ocean. I didn't even see the goddamn ocean, you know. We were 200 miles from the ocean. You know, and it's just made up. It was a corny thing. A corny image, you know, but it was an image I compassionately recognized, that it was an image of how isolated I felt and how kind of hopeless. and you made that up out of words. I couldn't have said that then. I couldn't have said, oh, I feel isolated and despairing and confused and like there's nobody here. I couldn't say that to anybody. I didn't, wasn't anybody I could talk to about that. And if I tried to write it in prose, it would just weigh me down. It would just make me heavier than lead, and I'd sink in that ocean. But the poem freed me. The poem was like, oh, man, you know, what is it? This beam me up, Scotty, this world sucks. You know, that old Star Wars T-shirt?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like language in song and lyric, it beams you up out of the world. It doesn't, it's not like a just totally made-up world, but it's the world transformed and constellated around how you feel it, what it feels like to you, what you see and feel. You don't worry about describing the table and the windows and the food and stuff. You just go for the kind of, somehow the heart of it, and you make up this world. It's a magical language. So I didn't journey to it. I was there just the first time. Now, that was an illusion in the sense that I didn't realize how hard it would be to keep doing that or how you do that with language again and again. But you're trying to make, in lyric poetry, and I think in song too, in popular song of any kind, you're trying to make a model of what it's like to be you in the world. And that has to do with a lot of feeling as well as... and it has to do with crisis. That's another thing.
It's interesting to hear you talk about language like that, because in reading your poems, the language is a thing, right? I mean, it's just here's the thing. There in some of the poems in many of the poems of yours that I read, the subject matter or the components are very material, right? You know, you talk about things that you can see and things that you can feel.
Parasocks.
Right. Yeah. Parasocks. It's, you know, and there are material things. And yet at the same time, there's this tension between how much the subject matter is something very concrete and very material. And at the same time, there's a very ethereal consideration that comes, and there's even one poem where you talk about the abstractness of language, and I wonder if with your poetry what you're trying to do is make the language something as material as the components of the poem.
Beautifully said. Yeah, put me down for that. Exactly. No, that's perfect. And that you're absolutely right. Materiality of language is like language is music for a poet. Whereas, you know, for a prose writer, sometimes really good prose, I guess, it's kind of transparent. You see the world through the language. We love the language. And I mean, I write really simple words.
That's a really nice distinction. Yeah.
But let's be really clear on this. I mean, I write very simple words. The words I use are intentionally very simple. There's a god-awful, I want to say that it's a bad rap that poetry has of being complicated and esoteric and intellectually elitist. And I want to say that's a bad rap, but no, it's true. It's there's a spectrum of poetry. And then there's also, poetry that's very simple and clear. And that it's simple and clear doesn't mean it can't talk about the deepest mysteries and crises of our being. I mean, love and death, for crying out loud. That's what lyric poetry's about, you know? And that's what rock and roll's about, well, mostly about love. But you lose your love and it's like death, so what the hell? Same thing. You know, it's so cool. And it's also what's cool about poetry and song is that it sort of emerges out of crisis moments. You fall in love. You don't want to write a novel about it, you know? You want to write a poem or a song?
You can so much see in your work the working of crisis moments, and also the workings of grief, whether or not it's your personal grief or about some type of grief, a grief for the poisoning of the world or whatever.
Our community was what happened at August.
Right, right. So I'm wondering. Because you teach when I was growing up, of course I was exposed to a lot of the theater and the movies from the 40s and 50s, and frequently you would get the narrative of the young writer who wants to go out and do something, and the constant message that that was being broadcast, and I think coming from Hemingway, because he was this big example. Mm-hmm. This is like, oh, you wanna write? First, you need to go out and live. Like you can't just get up and write, kid. You gotta go out and experience something and have something to write about. And I wonder if like you ever, because there's so much of your experience is in your poems. If you ever have students who come to you and you say, you know, you're not ready for this. You don't have anything to write about yet.
Yeah, well, it's certainly complicated. I mean, you do not. It's so tempting when you first start writing poetry as a young person. You know that your feeling life, your emotional life, has so much urgency for you and is giving you such a hard time that you do desperately want to turn that immediately into language. I think one of the things we try to teach as young people who want to write is the way to talk about feelings is to talk about the world in some kind of way. Like the first exercise I got, by the way, I don't teach anymore. 44 years, done that.
Done.
But, you know, I loved it and put something in a book about, you know, how to write. But the first thing that I have my students do, because they want to talk about truth and beauty and love. And yeah, we all do. But you got to bring it down into the world, you know, into some kind of language that's not abstract completely. This is what we want to write about. Grief and joy and, you know, all this stuff. But we don't know how to work with words in a way that, well, we have to relearn how to work with words. The first thing I do with my students is I have them say, okay, you're going to sit down and write 10 pages, and on the left-hand margin, you're going to begin, I remember. And then you're going to see what you write down. You know, I remember green socks. I remember my mother's, nose. I remember this. I remember that. And it's got to be short. You can't go on for like a paragraph. But what you do is, in the course of writing 10 pages of I Remember, you realize that you can't remember love and you can't remember beauty. You can remember an experience of it. I remember the first time I knew flowers were beautiful. It was a daisy or whatever the heck flower it was or something, you know, but you're in the world. You're using language to connect to the world. And the thing is, people know what a daisy is. We can agree on what a daisy is pretty much, you know. And so if you say daisy, it's possible in the reader's mind that this flower is going to show up. Whereas if you say love, they'll say, yeah, she is beautiful. And someone else says, that's my dog, you know. Yeah. And you know, it's like you're all, you know, you're not. Yeah. And you can't
bring it down into a
thing. And yet when you're doing that 10 pages, if I remember. When you go through those 10 pages, if I remember, I'm here to tell you, you come to a lot of sorrow and a lot of terror. You know, you remember things.
Oh, I'm just scared thinking about doing that exercise.
Oh, yeah? Well, I don't blame
you. Just imagining it doing it right now.
I don't blame you. I'm not sure I've ever done it. I know how scary it is. But I'll tell you, the first thing you do is you tell the students, nobody is going to see this. You're not going to share it with me. You're not going to share it with your parents, your friends.
That's
nobody.
Really important.
You can't, absolutely, because you have to feel safe, right? You know, you're going to be so vulnerable, so be safe. Thing.
Yeah.
We have to do artistic events.
You're blowing my mind.
No, don't be sorry. Oh my God, don't be sorry. You're an amazing person. And I'm sorry just that we have to depart and do these announcements, but we have to because we got to show love to all of our local artists here in the Charlottesville area doing their thing. So here are just some of the artistic events happening this week. Currently running. Check out these exhibits from these local artists. Radio Laria and Reef are Oceans Living. Abstractions by Tina Curtis at Second Street Gallery. Works by Erin Marie O'Keefe, Amanda Wagstaff, and Mary Lamb at New City Arts Welcome Gallery. Cry of the Cicada. Photography.
It's not what a cicada sounds like.
It is. Yeah. It is. That is a weeping cicada. He just read a Gregory Orr poem, and he's thinking about the love that he lost. Photographs by Bill Mousy at Chroma Projects. The second group show by the Feminist Union of Charlottesville Creatives with the greatest acronym on the face of the earth. Works by photographer Scott F. Smith. And the final work from 2018 to 2019, incubator residents, artists, all at McGuffey Arts Center. So many. These are more exhibits from your local artists, so just keep your eyes open. Check them out. Last chance, the Shenandoah Valley Bach Festival presents music by Franz Josef Haydn. That was close. At EMU Layman's Auditorium.
It's right out there. They're not hiding it. Sorry.
That was bad and so good at the same time. Currently running Angels in America Part 1, Millennium Approaches at Shannon Arts. June 18th, the Virginia Film Festival. I almost said Violent Film Festival. Why did I? The Virginia Film Festival presents the thriller Them That Follow at the Violet Crown. That's probably why I almost said it. Movie Theater Downtown. June 18th, tour to Paramount Theater at 12 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. You can do that. Didn't think you could do that, but you could do that. You can just walk around in it.
Historic Paramount.
It's a historic Paramount Theater, hence the tour. June 19th, Fun for the Young with Amy Hunt at UVA's Fralin Museum of Arts. Arts-related story time led by arts educator Amy Hunt while children explore a piece of art through play, movement, and hands-on projects. June 25th through September 3rd, wow, the American Shakespeare Center presents their summer season with four plays. Julius Caesar and Antony and Cleopatra by Shakespeare. Caesar and Cleopatra by George Bernard Shaw. And The Willard Suitcases by Ethan McSweeney. And for your music options this week...
Today, the Irish Music Jam session at Wayland's Crossings Tavern at 11:30. Also, Richmond's The Silas Fraser Band plays the Batesville Market at 1 p.m. Also today, Sisters and Brothers Duo at Prorenata Farm Brewery at 2 p.m. Greg Ward, former guest, at Glasshouse Winery at 3 p.m. This evening, Persimony Jam at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub at 5 p.m. The Brian Caputo Jazz Trio at the Oakhurst Inn. Go, Brian. June 18th, the second summer concert of the Charlottesville Municipal Band is happening at Fluvanna High School. June 19th, Gina Sobel at the Shabine Pub and Braai. On the 20th, Gallatin Canyon plays Night at the Museum at the Kluyeru Aboriginal Art Collection. Also on the 20th, Chris Leva of the Ragged Mountain String Band, Positive Collective, and the 77's Word. Okay, we talked about this, about musicians going on. Dude is in the Ragged Mountain String Band.
Okay.
You know, bluegrass, Positive Collective, reggae, and the 77s.
Oh, he's all in that.
He plays in all these different bands. He's playing a solo set at the Front Porch Roots Music School on June 20th. Who knows? June 20th, the Michael Clem Trio. The Michael Clem Trio at Stinson Vineyards. Also on the 20th, the Currys at the Whiskey Jar. Eli Cook on the 21st, playing Fridays After 5 at the Sprint Pavilion.
The Currys have probably nominated for Best Produced Album of 2019 of local artists because it's really good. Christ, that album is good.
It's really good.
It's like crystalline. Keep going. Sorry.
June 21st, Chickenhead Blues Band at Chisholm Vineyards and Adventure Farm. Dr. Levine and the Dreaded Blues Lady at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Johnny B and the Goods at Dirty Nelly's. Rochelle Claiborne comes back to present A History of Black Music Excellence at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall.
Yes!
On the 22nd,
I saw it at the Front Porch Roots Music School like a month ago. It was amazing.
On the 22nd, the Blues Festival at Rockfish Valley Community Center Pavilion. And June 22nd, Kate Bollinger plays her release concert for her new EP, I Don't Want to Lose, at the Southern Cafe Cafe and Music Hall. We're trying to get Kate on the show, so go see her concert so we can talk to her about it afterwards.
I was
going to
say, we should get her on the show.
We're trying. We're trying so desperately.
We try.
June 22nd, her checkered past at Grace Estate Winery. Also read in the Romantics at the Batesville Market. And the Tyler Dick Band at the Whiskey Jar. Every Sunday, it's Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. And Seafoot, the Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, their weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Tango Music with Miles Pierce and Maddie Metcalf at the Bebedero. Songwriter Night at the Local every Tuesday. Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. Lewis Smith and Friends at Fellini's. And the Traditional Irish Session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, the Mike Rosinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Wednesday and Thursday, Josh Mayo's Open Mic at 1221 Market Street and Bachata Fusion at the Rabbit Hole. Every Thursday, it's Humberto Salas and Vincent Zorn doing the Gypsy Rumba.
Oh, they're doing it.
At the Bebedero. And doing every Thursday.
And doing it well.
Every Thursday.
Sorry.
Just derailed me with that.
Totally derailed.
Every Thursday, representing Charlottesville but raised out of Brooklyn, John Durth and the John Durth Quintet at Miller's. Because every once in a while,
you just gotta come down
to Durth. And those are just some,
but not all,
of the artistic events
here
in your burgeoning Charlottesville.
We are nuts. We'll be back with Gregory Orr, right? Are we doing a commercial? Yeah. Commercial?
Yeah.
Commercial? All right. Gregory Orr, he's awesome. This is Homegrown. Cheer up!
This is local writer Amanda Corman. You're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
38 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Clinton. Gregory Orr is in the house, spitting his knowledge about all things poetry. Yeah, we were just on the subject of, I guess, quote unquote, how to write poetry. I was sitting in a house and I saw a book that just said how to write a poem, and I don't know, just the insolence of myself. Always found myself infuriated as this academic scholar, you know, educates me on how to be creative. But yeah. I see what you're saying in terms of like word structure and like.
I hope you didn't buy that
all.
Book.
No, I didn't.
The book you want to buy is a thing called The Primer for Poets and Readers of Poetry.
Okay, I'm gonna get that.
That's where like the I remember.
I think
thing
that guy knows a little bit more. What he's talking about.
It's like I have to quit teaching after all.
Yeah. Hold that sucker up.
Hold this up.
Yeah. We got
a camera here?
Yeah. That's thick.
Okay. That's the book you want to buy.
Buy my book. Buy my book.
Hi, Mom.
I can't believe you did.
In the great beyond. Okay. Yeah, anyway. But, you know, it's like I'm quitting teaching, but I love teaching. So that's sort of like the way I would introduce people to writing.
Why'd you stop, if I may ask?
Well, because I'm 72 years old. And let's see, there's some other reasons. I forget what they are.
Do there need to be other reasons?
See, that's it. I forget.
Are those reasons, people?
I forget. Well,
we're going to air it out on Homegrown. Who at UVA we going to put on blast? Come on, give it up.
I'm just playing.
I'm not trying to start static.
I'm cool with that, too. I don't, you know, but I just I knew it was time, you know. I mean,
that's fair.
I mean, kids are really young, and there's so many. I think what I put in there is stuff that could reach across generations.
Absolutely.
But when I'm interacting with really young people, their frames of reference, which are completely legitimately urgent to them, they're really hard to access for me, and vice versa. Yeah. I mean, things that interest me, they might say, mm-hmm. really? Give me a break. You know? I mean, I don't even know what you're talking about. And so, you know, that gulf, it's not something that I want to see face to face anymore.
Yeah. I wish that I could write, or that somebody written a book, Things That People Never Told Me About Getting Older.
Yeah.
And one of the things is just that feeling that when you, or that experience when there's this whole generation of young adults who are, you know, legitimate people. They're adults, but who have just
a whole different set of cultural references and frameworks that are just, and the world and what you have thought of as the world, you can feel sort of slipping away as another world comes up.
Yeah.
It's very disturbing.
It's disturbing, and you definitely don't want to get angry at it, which is a kind of common response, because really, it's not personal. This is just the way the world is. But as you say, getting old is not something we talk about a lot in America, which is very weird. Since, you know, I'm from the baby boom generation.
Mm-hmm.
And
your,
like, you know.
Your generation talked a lot about youth, right?
Of course. We invented it with the damn 60s. But there's too many of us old people now. We definitely don't want to be angry. I mean, and we don't want to feel guilty about the world that we're leaving to you young people.
Mm.
We should, but we, you know, if we did, what would we do? We couldn't. Who knows? Anyway, there are certain points where you realize there are stages of life, and my teaching stage is over, you know, in that form, and also, you know, don't forget. I mean, I love teaching. I just totally fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it was also how I made a living. It wasn't. It's my heart is with my family. And with my writing.
So, speaking of which, can we talk about the new book?
Absolutely.
Sure.
The last love poem I will ever write.
Okay.
Is that true?
I sure hope not.
What's the title?
My wife would be really pissed if that was the case. She's still saying, when are you going to write one? She likes that a great deal.
I was holding myself from saying, do you really write love?
There's love in a different way. It's not happy, sweet, and friendly.
Right.
Shiny, happy people, but
you know,
it's...
Somebody once
it's
said...
It's like a love song by The Cure. It doesn't sound like a love song, but it's an actual love song.
Love is a complicated process.
Incredibly.
In
the middle of it.
I've got a poem somewhere that, you know, there's got a refrain line going through it. And it goes, love or need, who can tell the two apart? Mm. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, there you go. Who knows? Anyway, I was thinking about something, speaking of arts and the vitality of our community. I have a poem here called Charlottesville Elegy. And it was inspired, in a sense, by the events of August 2017. And what happened to my wife, who's a visual artist, is that she was so freaked out that she found herself making these drawings about the events. And there's an online magazine called Narrative. And... we just heard from them yesterday that they've put up some of my poems about political poems. Some of my poems in the new book are political, like Charlottesville Elegy, and her drawings, and they're up there together. And that's really exciting to me because I was kind of disturbed that there wasn't more of a coordinated artistic response to the alt-right event.
Talk about that.
I felt as if, I mean, I'm not a political writer, but I'm not a political poet in and of itself. I've had, you know, I know very well what my politics are and stuff, but you write about what you can do well. And I didn't feel I was really skilled with social political things. But you still have to, sometimes you have to respond. And I thought, well, if I'm responding with a poem, there are so many poets and writers around who are, you know, more drawn and more naturally gifted in that direction. And I just felt like we should have had some kind of city-sponsored exhibit of visual artists and poets, writers, gathering as a community and saying, hey, listen, this is our creative response, our expressive response to this event. And, you know, we're not going to take this passively. Artistic creativity isn't passive. It's active. It's not, you know, it's not the active. It's not active in the same way that voting is active or political organizing. But it sometimes, well, anyway, I'm going to read that poem, Charlottesville Elegy, if you've got a moment.
Oh, yes.
Or do we not?
Do
no,
it.
No.
We've,
nah. We got it.
We've got it.
We got
I think
it.
We got a few minutes.
We got it. Let me try it. Because it was inspired by one of her. She
we'll do that, then we'll do the drop.
Okay. She wanted to the city to make a fountain with that was an eye. An eye made of bronze with a tear coming out of it, you know, down into the basin. And so she drew that fountain for me, and that gave me the image of this eye that witnesses. So and this is called Charlottesville Elegy. There's a single eye that hovers above this city, hovers by day and by night. You might assume it's the sun or the moon, but I've lived here 40 years and never seen it before. It isn't the bitter eye of racism which haunts alleys and grocery aisles, nor the icy eye of privilege. I've seen that many times shining above the university, or gazing down on Farmington's lawns, groomed smoother than golf greens. It's not the internet's eye that can't sleep for the fever dreams it breeds, nor the secret eye of the pine's cut stump, nor the eye of the poor that has seen it all. It's not the black eye of notoriety, nor the blue one of denial. It's not the state's blank eye made of paper mache, nor the eye of the police that was looking the other way. It's not the eye of violence that would strike lightning if it could, nor the eye of love that sees but doesn't judge. Neither is it Jefferson's eye, inert in bronze repose, nor that of Sally Hemings, startled even in eternity. It's certainly not God's eye, that turned away eons ago. It's not the eye of witness that winced, nor the eye of grief that wept briefly, then resumed its journey through this ruthless world. Undeceived, unassuageable eye, remorseless eye, it's come to remind our city of a proverb older than the pyramids. If you've closed one eye to evil, you'd better not blink.
We'll be right back. This is Homegrown. Drop.
Johnson of Darkson Entertainment. You're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Here you are. You're the spokespeople. You know, you're the channel for the arts community, and you know everything that's happening mm-hmm. here. And I'm off at the edge, and my wife and I, we just. You know,
yeah.
we paint and write, and I couldn't find it. I know it's here because
yeah.
I know this community. I know it's got energy mm-hmm. and stuff. But I don't know how to organize.
That's and activism has many forms of expression. And I just thought it was something that I agree to a certain extent. I think that instead of the city passing off like empty slogans and ways of like garnering tourists to get back into town, they should have done more sponsored events to, actually channel the pain and the trauma that this entire community was going through.
Absolutely. But I'm gonna build on that and maybe flip that a little because being someone who has the day job and whose day job suffered from the lack of tourists,
right.
and thus whose livelihood then was threatened by the suffering day job from the lack
Absolutely.
Of tourists.
Mm.
I don't want to, it's not, I hear what you say. But it's not as simple as just sort of dismissing the concern of making people feel safe. But to add on to that, some type of organized artistic response could have gone a long way to achieving that, to saying, hey, here's something that you can attach to Charlottesville that isn't an onrush of Nazis and white supremacists.
Denial's not the way to go. We don't want to spend all of our city money and city energy getting a new tourism slogan and papering over what happened. It's not going away. Charlottesville will forever be, will
attached
be those scenes. Absolutely. Nobody has to explain where Charlottesville is anymore, on the map, the way we used to have to. Oh yeah, no, it's not Charlotte. It's Charlottesville.
So I just want to ask, moving forward, you've seen so much and you've written about so much in your life, 40 plus years of writing about what's happening in your life and seeing all of these moments of history kind of come around and repeat themselves and kind of, teaching that for a moment of time to young people, how to embrace those moments and just taking them on your own. Talk about that. Talk about experiencing the world and seeing the circles and writing about it at the same time and kind of telling people not to go through the same mistakes while people are going through the same mistakes.
Yeah. Well, oh gosh. I mean, I don't.
What did you say before we started the show about just writing to try to catch up?
Sounds good. Yeah. I think all a writer can do is express what's in him or her. If the writers that turned me off when I was young were the ones who preached to me.
Yeah.
So it's really scary when you get old and you do want to share what you've learned, but you don't want to sound preachy. Maybe that's where I lost my religion. Those are really long sermons I had to sit through. and then when I needed them, they weren't there. Mm-hmm. They were there for the sermon, but not for the suffering. So it's really complicated. This is where we were with Krista Tippett. I was talking with her on this On Being show, and she said, "Well, do you see any hope?" And I said, "Well, I don't know whether I see hope, but I recommend courage." You know what I mean? It's like, we're still here. We shouldn't be because we're so messed up culturally.
That's amazing because they
just have to be brave.
So they're like, again, your poems, there are frequently moments of violence, both large and small, frequently small. There are moments where their death is spoken explicitly about and then implicitly about, but they never, what really shocks me is they're not downers. You recommend courage, and you recommend love.
Yeah, and
you
recommend the poems that I've read from you. I've always recommended. Well, not recommended, but I've seen a certain amount of acceptance and bravery in the end of it. It's this is a kind of solitary situation, but it is what it is. But we got 1 minute. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we get out of here?
Well, we're a culture full of strong, brave individuals. I mean, if we can keep our values,
And that's the thing. That's what I'm worried about. If we can keep our values, I'm really worried about that.
Yeah, that's what we're here for as artists, I think, is to try to remind...
In public spaces, we don't even say excuse me and hello to people anymore. And it's like, do we even see each other anymore as people? And I worry about that, but we got to get out of here. Gregory Orr, it's been an absolute, absolute pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me, thank you.
To be able to speak with you for this long, and I hope and pray that you come back to the show.
Anytime.
Yes. All right. We got to get out of here. Wake Up Morning Call is next. Thank you so much, Gregory Orr. The last love poem I will ever write at New Dominion Bookshop, June 18th. It's going down. It's being released. You can't get it until then. What is it? That's 2 days from now. you can't even audible it. So get your Gregory Orr book. It's going to be amazing. Thank you so much to him and everybody else for making Homegrown possible. I love you, Clinton.
Love
Let's
you,
get out of here. Peace.
All right. This has been Homegrown, your show dedicated to local art. Our opening music was by Positive Collective. Our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music is by Positive Collective. We're returning to that music by Positive Collective right now. Any complaints about Homegrown, of course, should be directed to our attorneys at the fine Lisping Law Firm of Tuchterman, Overman, Munson, and Burke. Legal services that wrap around you like a thong. Remember to keep your dial on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Peace.
WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.